Just let me wish Mazel Tov to the Simon family and allowing us to run through a minsa a few minutes. And the opportunity to speak at the prestigious pulpit of Rabbi Gettinger is something I don't take lightly, so I appreciate the opportunity. The program from the OU to swap pulpits is for various communities to be exposed to rabbis to whom they might not be exposed. So this one, she walked over four blocks back and forth. But I've never spoken in this room, and it feels like a miniature kotel, so I appreciate the opportunity. I would like to speak about Tzom Gedalia and what this fast means for us historically. And why a Gemara in Nedarim, when it chooses the epitome of the exemplary fast, where someone takes upon a fast like this fast, the Gemara says, "Hareini betanis kiyom shemeis avi," Nebuch, the day of the passing of a parent, and it says, so this fast should be like that. Ukiyom shemeis shekbo neherag Gedalia ben Achikam. In other words, the Gemara considered that there's a personal tragedy, the loss of a parent, and the greatest national tragedy was the loss of Gedalia ben Achikam. The Mefarshim grapple with this. The Gemara should have said, "Ukiyom shenechrav beis hamikdash," should be the national tragedy, should be the day of the loss of the temple, and that would plug into, incidentally, some other tragedies that took place on the same day. What was so harrowing about the third of Tishrei that the Gemara should use this as the paradigm for the national tragedy? And a brief overview, if I can do that in under 10 minutes, of Sefer Yirmiyahu with the promises he made for the future that were added on to the prophecies of Yechezkel, the end of Yeshayahu, Zechariah, Chagai, Malachi, Ezra, Nehemiah, the promises that Yirmiyahu made of the return after 70-year Galus, over what would be in the second commonwealth, where Chagai said, "Gedol yeyeh kevod habayit hazeh acharon min harishon," this temple will be even more glorious than the first. And it just never was. There was hardly any time of independence in Bayis Sheni, just a few short years after the Hanukkah story, and even that was very short-lived and gave rise to the evils of the Chashmonaim that turned into from Aristobulus and John Hyrcanus to the Roman quagmire that led to, and this just was not a Bayis Sheni. It was simply did not lead to the promises of these seven or eight Nevi'im I just mentioned. What went wrong? What went wrong was Gedalia ben Achikam. Yirmiyahu had predicted the fall of the empire, meaning the kingdom of Yehuda, the sacking of Yerushalayim, and the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. He had been predicting these three for close to 40 years. He kept telling Bnei Yisrael, you can prevent this fall with your changing your behavior, different stages of the book. The Sefer Yirmiyahu in itself happens to be very jumbled in its chronology. You can be in the beginning of his Sefer in chapter 45, and you could be at the end of his Sefer in chapter 2, depending on the Mefarshim, but even in the introductions he gives to the chapters. He's talking to Tzidkiyahu in chapter 20, and he's talking to Yehoyakim 25 years earlier in chapter 45. And the whole entire book is this way. Chazal were aware of it, and they said that this is par for the course, considering the harrowing circumstances of how Yirmiyahu wrote. Be it as it may, throughout the book he speaks to Bnei Yisrael about trying to prevent this calamity, that calamity. At one point in chapter 25, he tells Bnei Yisrael, he drops the gauntlet and he says, there will be a 70-year exile. No matter what you do, you will not be able to prevent that. And that's why right after saying this, and then predicting the fall of the temple at the same time, they try to kill him. And they would have killed him if a man named Achikam ben Shafan had not stepped in and brought proof together with others, but he was the one who grabbed him and saved his life. And he said, he's not the first person to predict this. And they cite by name, Micha HaMorashti. They cite exactly word for word a pasuk in Micha, Zion Sodet Techaresh, Yerushalayim Liyim Tiyeh, V'Har HaBayis L'Bamos Yar. And the fact that Yirmiyahu is saved from the prophecy of Micha, that some 150 years ago someone else predicted the fall of the temple. Did they kill him for doing that? No, they did tshuva. Chizkiyahu repented, and the commonwealth was saved. So it behooves us to listen to this man as well. Right? The Gemara tells after, the story tells afterwards that a man named Uriah gave the exact same prophecy, and him they killed. Right? So this is the Gemara at the end of Makos, but that's too much of a tangent. I will, the Gemara at the end of Makos, where it speaks of a man named Uriah and a man named Zechariah speaking together as witnesses for a particular event. Uriah is the bad Nevuah, Zechariah is the good Nevuah. That's the Uriah here in the same chapter. Yirmiyahu was saved, Uriah was not. But the man who saved him was named Achikam ben Shaphan. He will come back to us shortly. Yirmiyahu walked around the streets of Jerusalem and tried to convince the people, submit to the Babylonians. If you submit, your lives will be saved. This was not a popular sentiment in Israel. It's about as popular as the Naturi Karta saying today, submit to the Iranians and let them take over. It's better for us to do so. This is Yirmiyahu's message. You can say, well, Yirmiyahu was a Navi. The people did not think so. They jailed him at every turn. They put him in the stocks. They tried to kill him on a number of occasions. Hashem told him all this in chapter 1 when he refused his mission, and Hashem said, no, you have to do it. You were chosen from birth. It's Haftorah we read in the first of the 3 weeks before Tisha B'Av. So Yirmiyahu was convinced to do this. He walked around the streets making a perfect fool of himself. He would walk around with baskets of figs and fruits and show them one basket with beautiful figs, one basket with rotten figs, and they'd ask him, what are you doing? And he'd say, these rotten figs, these are the Jews who fight the Babylonians and stand up to them. These good, beautiful figs, these are the Jews who put up their hands in the air and say, do with me what you want. When the Babylonians did come to sack Yerushalayim, Yirmiyahu was in jail at the time. They freed him from jail, and they said that Nebuzaradan said, do not touch this man. Let him remain behind with any community he would like to have. The Jews started to fight from caves, guerrilla warfare, and Yirmiyahu was successful in getting those Jews to put down their arms and have another chance. This is what Tzom Gedalia represents. It's a second chance. Rosh Hashanah is over. We're moving towards Yom Kippur with Tzom Gedalia in the middle. And so that is a representation of what Gedalia represented for Bnei Yisrael after the Churban Beis HaMikdash. All was not lost. Far from it. There was a community of tens of thousands of Jews who were allowed to remain. And you will be governed by Gedalia ben Achikam ben Shaphan, the son of the man who saved Yirmiyahu's life. Yirmiyahu chose him. If it was to return the favor for the man who saved his life, it doesn't matter. But Yirmiyahu chose Gedaliah as the one who would prop up this community for a crucial reason that is as important as anything else that has happened since the Churban. So that when 70 years would pass, and it would be time to return, and Ezra and Nehemiah and Haggai, Zechariah and Malachi were bidding the people, it's time to come back, that they would. But you know what happened? They didn't. You know how many Jews returned? Fewer Jews after those 70 years returned than the amount of Jews who came to Israel every single year between 1990 and 1996. Fewer, do you hear that again? Only 42,360 Jews came all together. The entire effort of Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi produced 42,360 Jews. And the reason is because of the tragedy of Gedalia. Had Gedalia been able to survive and left a community of a few hundred thousand Jews living in Israel, then the land would have been tilled, the vineyards would have been kept, just as Yeshayahu promises. There will be a remnant in Israel. There was supposed to be a remnant. So this is what ought to have been. Prophets are constantly telling us what ought to be if we just listen. We didn't listen. And we killed him. We killed Gedalia. We thought he was just a lackey, Yirmiyahu's poster boy. They didn't like Yirmiyahu, and they didn't like the one he hired to take charge. So this was a horrible lost opportunity. You'd say the destruction of the temple was a lost opportunity. That was a fait accompli in the middle of Sefer Yirmiyahu. But there should have been a community so that if you can look at this, think of this example, that the Jews returning to Israel after 70 years would be returning to Israel, let's say, 1970 and not 1870. Do you know what it was like to return to Israel with the first Aliyah? They had to battle malaria, they had to battle marshes, there was nothing... The people who conquered Israel for 2,000 years never built it up. It's only been built up by Jews now, and everyone else wants it now. But no one ever... People only conquered Israel. No one built it up. There's a Rashi in Parshas Bechukosai that says that's a Midah Tova for Israel, that it will never succeed in the hands of anyone but us. So it could have been with tilled soil, with vineyards were and growing, with could have been with a land ready to take in the people, but it wasn't, and that's why the Jews didn't want to come. There was something else, actually. A second, there was Tartila Reusa. Two reasons why so few Jews came, because it turned out to be so profoundly difficult in Israel, and on top of that, so good in Persia. When the Gemara at the end of in the middle of Daftez Zayin in the Seches Megillah says that Mordechai was Ritzui L'Rov Echov. Show me one Jewish leader who has been Ritzui L'Kol Echov. But what did you have to say L'Rov Echov? I know L'Rov Echov means to the many Jews, like Rov Banov earlier in the same Megillah. But L'Rov Echov, the Gemara mentioned, takes to mean the majority of his brethren followed him. Pirshu Mimenu Mikta Sanhedrin. Because they didn't like the fact that the Jew was so high, in such a high place. I knew Jews who did not vote for Gore Lieberman because they didn't want a Jew as a vice president. They didn't think, don't think it's a good idea. I will debate that the virtues of such an opinion or not. But the Gemara in Daftez Zayin says it was not a good thing for Mordechai to be in such a position of power for the simple reason the Jews were saying, well, Haggai is telling us to come back to Israel. What are you talking about? One of ours is the queen. One of ours is the prime minister. It's so good here for us. Right? Nenu Misudas Achashverosh, right? This is after the whole story, and they're still having Hanah from it. And that prevented the bulk of Jews in the diaspora from returning. Because it was so good for them in Persia, and turned out to be the way it wasn't supposed to be, but so bad for them in Israel at the time. That is, I submit to you, is why the story of Gedalia takes this prominent place in the Gemara in Nedarim, the way it did, as I said before. But it is still about second chances. So it's for us to have still another day of introspection, and we still have, of course, the Seris Mechuba leading into Yom Kippur. I'll leave you with a thought. When we say at the end of who shall live, who shall die, who by water, who by fire, we say Uteshuva, Utefila, Utzedaka, Mavir, Nisro, Hagzera. Right? There are many, many drushes about these three words, Kol, Mamon, and Tzom, Zos, all these beautiful drushes. Why this order? Why Tshuva, Tefila, Tzedaka? Is there an order here? Is it an alphabetical order? Is it in mitzvah order? What is the order? So I thought of this just on my way here, thinking that it seems that the order might be the simplicity in which these things can be started. It's very easy to start tshuva. The Gemara in Kedushin says you start tshuva by just saying one thing. I want to do tshuva. That's it. Now start. But if a man says to a woman, Harayat Mekudeshes Li Amanas Shani Tzadik, right? You were betrothed to me on the condition that I'm a tzadik. The Gemara says Mekudeshes. What? Beis Shmuel, all the Beforshim, Tevin Ezra, has so many questions. What about the cheating he did? What about the money he owes? What about the gezel he has? That's his first step. Shema hir her betshuva even. But certainly we, who right now, it's a vaday that we're mahara betshuva, right? All you have to say is Harayani Tzadik. That's why, according to some, why we read about Bashir Husham on Rosh Hashanah. We may be saying all the same al-chait next year, but right now we mean it. So tshuva is very easy to start. Tefillah, I have a book open, so just start, open it up. Tzedakah takes a little more out of me. I have to take something from me. But in reality, it's the exact opposite. Tzedakah is the easiest thing to do. It's the easiest. Just have to take a dollar. You have the mitzvah tzedakah. It's the easiest thing to do. Tefillah, Avodah Shebalev, is such a difficult thing. It's a leap of faith that these words can make a difference. And teshuva is it doesn't, you don't have to be an alcoholic or a gambler or a compulsive obsessive disorder of any whatever it is that we want to change in order to recognize that teshuva, changing your a rogiel, a hergiel dover, is the most difficult thing to do. So in one way, the order seems to be from simplicity to difficulty, but in another way, it moves exactly the opposite direction, with tefillah always in the middle. So tefillah we always have, and that's what we'll continue now with Maariv. I thank you for this opportunity to share a few words with you. May we be zoche that we can speak of what the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says, typically, Shu Yom Shenera Gabal Gedali Ben Achikam, is actually a holiday. So we look forward to such a time. Bezos Hashem.
Thank you, sir.